Welcome to the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast, your weekly dose of accounting and tax tips specific to small business owners. You will be on your way to growing your business and paying the least amount in taxes as legally possible. Here's your host, Mike Jezoshek, CPA.
Today, we are answering listener questions. So if you have a question like this, you never know, you could be on our next podcast. If you have a question that you would like to have us answer live on a podcast, go to taxsavingspodcast.com, click podcast on top, scroll down, and there's a form there that you can submit to submit your question. You never know, your question might be answered next on one of our live episodes. Before we get started, I just want to remind you that we have a webinar coming up on April 24th at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And we're going to talk about how you can slash your taxes here in 2024, specifically as a business owner. So if you're interested in signing up for that, that's coming up very soon now. Go to taxsavingspodcast.com/taxes. Again, today we're taking live listener questions. So questions that have been submitted to us by listeners, members of our free Facebook group, and all across the internet that have questions specific to us. And that's what we're going to do today. So let's knock into it. First question is from Kelly. And she says, can you hire an older child to watch your younger children in order for you to work at your business? Kelly, this is a great question. I just want to say that generally stating, no, the IRS is going to say that that's not an ordinary necessary business expense for you to pay your child out of your business and get a business deduction for it. Now, I would say there are some few scenarios where we've actually seen this work out. And typically, this is going to be when a company offers on-site daycare services for their employees. The key thing with this, and this is why it doesn't work for most business owners, is that that service has to be used by the majority of non-tainted groups, so non-tainted employees. So basically, in order for this to work, the majority of the people utilizing this daycare service that you're offering would have to be employees that are non-owners, non-related to owners, and also not highly compensated. So let's say that you had a business with 100 employees and you were offering on-site daycare service as an employee option, or as an employee benefit. And the majority of the people that were utilizing this daycare service were non-owners, non-highly compensated employees, not related to the owners. Then there's a possibility that we can make this work. But for most small business owners that are just solo business owners, maybe they're their only employee, getting a deduction for daycare costs or for hiring someone to watch their child while they're running their business is not a deductible expense, unfortunately. The next question is from John, and he says, does the HSA high deductible requirement, what is the high deductible requirement for 2024 and would I qualify? So for 2024, and I'm just looking up here, what the IRS says qualifies as a high deductible health plan related to HSA in order to contribute to an HSA and have an HSA is a deductible of more than $1,600 if you're single or $3,200 if you're married. Now, we talk a lot about HSAs and health savings accounts and how we believe that everybody, whether you're a business owner or not, should be maximizing these as much as possible, assuming you qualify, assuming you have a high deductible health plan. Again, minimum deductible of $1,600 if you're single, $3,200 if you're married, and then you can qualify for an HSA. And an HSA is a beautiful tool. It's a tool where you get a deduction when you put money into it. That money grows tax-free. And assuming you use that money for qualified medical costs, when you take that money out, there's no taxes on it. Now, a lot of people say, well, Mike, I'm healthy, so I don't need to really be utilizing an HSA now. And I say, well, let's not look at it that way. Think of this almost as a retirement plan on steroids, a retirement plan that you get a deduction going in, grows tax-free, and no taxes going out. Because at some point, you're going to have health costs. And at that point, when that comes up, you're either going to be pulling out of a retirement plan, or you can have an HSA, and then you can use those retirement funds for living, for doing the things you want to do, and have an HSA cover all those medical costs as you get older. So we recommend that everybody utilize an HSA as long as you qualify and as long as you can afford it to be utilizing an HSA on a regular basis. A question, great question, John, something we want to be focusing on. We have a question from Mike, and he said, my wife and I purchased a preschool with owner financing, and I was wondering how that can be expensed through the business. Is it goodwill or a loan payable or neither or something else? Any help would be appreciated. So Mike, this is a really good question and something that comes up a lot for people that are buying businesses. And so when you buy a business, traditionally those business purchase is going to be considered an asset sale. And when you have an asset sale, You determine a purchase price. Let's just for easy purposes say it's $1,000 or $100,000. So we have a purchase price of $100,000. Both the buyer and the seller need to agree on how they're going to allocate that across the business. So let's say you have a bunch of desks that are worth $10,000 and then computers that are worth $20,000 and then other furniture that's worth $20,000. We now have $50,000 in assets, and let's say we come in an agreement from that. So when you purchase that for $100,000, $50,000 of that is going to be related to assets, and you're going to depreciate those assets on your new business as if you bought those assets. And then the remaining portion goes to goodwill, and that goodwill piece is amortized over time. Now, when you talk about the seller financing piece, there is really two pieces to seller financing payments. You have the principal, and then you have interest. And maybe you have interest or not interest. I don't know what your agreement looks like. But whenever you have a loan, the principal pieces are not deductible. So let's say you make a payment, loan payment, it's $2,000, $1,500 goes to principal, $500 goes to interest or whatever the breakdown is. The $1,500 towards principal, not deductible, but the $500 towards interest, that would always be deductible. So for this seller financing, that seller financing piece, that would be considered a loan payable. The amount that you seller financed would be a loan payable. Any principal payments against that are not deductible, but any interest portion would be deductible. But you're still, if you're allocating some of that purchase cost to assets, you're still able to depreciate it on that side. So that's where you get your deduction from. This can be kind of complex, and we actually have an episode that we're doing later this year talking about different types of sales, how sales are treated, and all those different things. But hopefully that helps. Basically, essentially, when we're talking about a loan, which is what seller financing is, the interest portion of a payment against a seller financing loan is tax deductible, but the principal piece is not. But when you do purchase something, let's look at it. Let's say you're not even buying a business. Let's say you bought a vehicle. You bought an $80,000 vehicle, 100% on loan. When you purchase that vehicle, you have an asset that gets put on your books for $80,000. You also have a liability in that of the loan that gets put on your books for $80,000. Now you get to depreciate that asset that you bought for $80,000. Even when you make those loan payments, you're not getting a deduction on that loan payment. You're getting the deduction on the depreciation, the asset that you purchased. So look at your closing agreements, and there should be some IRS forms that kind of break down the assets of that preschool that you bought versus a goodwill and how that's allocated, and then talk to your accountant about taking the full deduction for those items. The next question we have is from Curtis. How can I rent equipment I personally own to my business? I'm a sole member LLC. For example, if I need a generator for a day to use to collect water samples in the field, can I use my personal generator and charge a fair price back to the business? Do I send my business an invoice? Thank you. Love the podcast. Well, Curtis, thanks for tuning into the podcast. We love when listeners like you submit your questions, and I'm glad you're enjoying it. I just ask one thing, and this is for all of our listeners. If you enjoy what we're doing here, please leave a review on wherever you listen to us, share our podcast, subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our podcast, and share this with other business owners. The more that we can help other people, the more that we can just continue to pump up great content and free content for listeners like you. So Curtis, to go back to your question here, we're talking about renting equipment to our business that we wouldn't necessarily want to do a rental type agreement, because what happens is, sure, we could create a rental agreement, invoice, make the payment, and do all that. But you're getting an expense on the business side, but now you have rental income on the personal side. And this comes up a lot too with people with home office, and they say, well, I want to rent my home office to my business. And we say, but that's, you're washing it out, because sure, you're getting a business deduction from that rental piece, but now you're paying income taxes on that rental income that you have. And so that's where this idea of an accountable plan comes in place. And this is something we use for the home office. This is something we can use for anything that you own personally that has a business use for it. An accountable plan is a way to reimburse yourself for business-related items that you paid for personally, get a business deduction for it, and then not have to pay income tax on that income you received. Now, we did a bunch of episodes on accountable plans, how those work, so definitely check that out, but you need to set these up correctly. And if they're set up correctly, then when you reimburse yourself from the business, you get a business deduction, and you pay no tax on that money flowing through to you personally. We want to avoid type of rental type agreements in general. We want to avoid rental type agreements with yourself personally, because now we're getting a deduction, but we're also paying income taxes on that. Next question is from an anonymous Facebook group member. Now, if you're not part of our Facebook group yet, go there now, go to Facebook and search Small Business Tax Secrets. There's a group there that you can join. join in with other listeners of the podcast and submit your questions there and collaborate with other business owners. But we have a question in there that said, as an S corporation, can I look at what I made last year, pick an amount as a salary, and then count the rest as distributions? So sorry if this question seems dumb. I'm really trying to learn all I can. Thanks. First off, no question is dumb, especially when it comes to taxes. This stuff is complicated, and that's why we're here to help you. And I just also want to recommend that if you're looking for the more hands-on, more deeper learning, you can always join our software, TaxElm. That's TaxElm.com. And we have a ton of resources, content, and features, including unlimited access to a team of tax experts whenever you have questions like this. So definitely check out TaxElm, TaxElm.com. But to answer your question, when we look at reasonable salary, we have a whole series on S Corporation. I recommend you go through this. This is all free content. Go to taxsavingspodcast.com/S Corp. That's taxsavingspodcast.com/S Corp. But in that series, we have an episode on how do you determine a reasonable salary? And there's really kind of two ways that we can determine a reasonable salary. One, we can just do a portion of income. Now, if we do a portion of income, this is not proven by the IRS. This is not acceptable by the IRS. But if we do a portion of income, we find that we tend to find that the IRS is not going to target it. Now, if you were to get targeted for that reasonable salary determination, you would have to come up with proof on why that's a reasonable salary. And that's why we lean towards this method of determining reasonable salary. We count, okay, what would you pay someone to do the type of work that you're doing? If you're a marketing CEO, what would you have to hire someone to do what you're doing for your business? Or track the hours. How many hours a week are you spending on administrative duties, doing bookkeeping, things like that? How many hours a week are you spent on doing marketing for your business? How many hours a week are you spent doing your actual job? So let's say you're an attorney and you spend 10 hours a week doing administrative work. You spend 10 hours a week doing marketing services, and then you spend 30 hours a week being an attorney. Now let's kind of find out, what does a person in your locality make on an hourly rate for those types of service? So take the hourly rate for an administrative person times your 10 hours. And the hourly rate for a marketing person times your 10 hours. And the hourly rate for an attorney in your area times your 30 hours. Annualize that, and now we're coming to a reasonable salary that is much more solid. We have a foundation. We have something to say, hey, here's how we determined our reasonable salary. Here's the proof behind it. But definitely check out that episode. I don't want to go into this in full detail, but we have a full podcast episode, blog post, video, all that, that talks about reasonable comp. So definitely check that out, taxsavingspodcast.com/S Corp. This episode is brought to you by TaxElm. At TaxElm, we understand that saving taxes can be complex and overwhelming for business owners. That's why we're here, to be that tax strategist in your back pocket, ensuring that you pay the least amount in taxes as legally possible. With TaxElm, you receive a tax savings blueprint tailored to your business needs, unlimited access to our team of tax experts, and an annual one-on-one live consultation. You'll also have access to our comprehensive training with videos, downloads, templates, workbooks, guides, and so much more, along with our monthly live trainings to keep you informed and in control. Thousands of business owners across the country trust TaxElm. It's time you did too. Visit us now and take that first step towards paying the least amount in taxes as legally possible. There has never been a better time to join TaxElm. Do not forget about our 30-day money-back guarantee. We guarantee that we will present tax-saving strategies that will, at a minimum, cover the cost of your subscription fee or your money back. This is your risk-free invitation to explore the benefits of TaxElm membership and how it can transform your approach to tax planning and savings. Go to TaxElm.com. That is TaxElm.com. Now back to the show. We have a question from Jacqueline, and they said, I just filed my taxes for 2023 and just received a 1099-K from my processing system for 2022. All of the sales and income on that form were already reported for 2022 taxes. So will this form affect anything now? No. So a 1099 is simply just a form that reports income to the IRS. So when a 1099, when you pay a contractor, as an example, you send them a 1099, the IRS is getting that as well. So what the IRS will do is they'll collect all these 1099s they received, and they'll match that up to what you reported as sales or revenue in your business. And if you reported $1,000 in sales and revenue, but a 1099 comes in for $10,000, that's going to raise a flag. The IRS is going to say, well, wait a minute. We got reported that you had at least $10,000 in sales that was reported on a 1099, but you're only showing $1,000. that's going to raise a red flag. We're going to come after you and learn, try to understand what happened there. So what I always say is that if you receive income, whether you receive a 1099 or not, you have to report that income. We don't just report what we receive a 1099 for. We have to report all income, regardless of if we receive a 1099 or not. And if you're doing that, which it sounds like you were doing, Jacqueline, you already reported that income. It doesn't matter what the 1099s say. Now, a caveat to that, as I would say, always double check your 1099s. Make sure that if you receive a 1099, it matches what you received from that person. Because if for some reason they screwed it up, and let's say someone paid you $10,000, but they sent you a 1099 for $15,000, that could cause some issues. And you want to rectify that and say, hey, I think your 1099 is wrong, or maybe your records are wrong. And that can help be a little bit of a reconciliation. But assuming that income was already, you already reported it regardless, it doesn't matter. That 1099 will not affect things, if that makes sense. Next question we have is from Danielle. This question concerns tracking business miles. I've been told so many different things that I don't know what to believe at this point. I have a tutoring company and I regularly travel to my students. Do I track miles round trip or am I only allowed to track from my residence to theirs? Danielle, this is a great question. This is a problem that we see a lot with tax items is that there's a lot of information out there. Sometimes it contradicts, sometimes it doesn't. And so I hope that we can kind of help be that true source of reliable information for you. So when we're talking about deductible business mileage, the IRS looks at a commute as non-deductible. So if I go, let's say I'm a business owner, I'm a doctor, I have a doctor's office, and I go from my home to my doctor's office, that's considered a commute. That's not a deductible business trip. But if I go from my home to my doctor's office, and now I go to the post office to mail something, and then I go visit another client somewhere else, and then I come back to my doctor's office, those are deductible miles. That doctor's office to the post office, to the client, back to the office, that's all deductible business mileage. Now I'll tell you a little trick. We talk about how most business owners should be taking advantage of the home office deduction in some sort of way. And so if you can prove that you start your days and end your days in your home office, maybe you're doing administrative work at your home office, you answer some emails at your home office, and then you go to another office or to a client or to the post office for work-related items. Anyway, you're leaving your home office to go to other places for work. Now that's no longer a commute because you're going from an office to another office or an office to a client, an office to the post office, some business-related mileage, that's no longer a commute. And so this is where we say, okay, the home office is great and we're getting a good deduction for that. But now we're expanding it even further by having that home office deduction because it expands the amount that we can use in automobile expenses if we're utilizing that home office, because now it's removing a lot of those typical commute miles. It's turning to be business deductible. So definitely check out our items on home office, our automobile podcast and things like that. But to answer your question, Danielle, hopefully that's helpful. Hopefully I kind of cleared the way of, hey, sometimes it can be deductible and sometimes it can't. We just need to make sure we're setting everything up correctly and doing that process the right way to make sure we're maximizing the deductibility of our options available to us. We have another question from a Facebook group member. Could someone recommend the best / easiest way to run payroll for my S Corp? Currently a sole prop, but income is crossing $500,000 this year and I need to run payroll to avoid some of the FICA taxes. Any suggestion on the best software to use? It would only be myself that I'd have to do payroll for. First off, yes, definitely look into the S Corporation. And the biggest thing here is that you need to become an LLC or a corporation and then elect S Corp status. So you're still operating as a sole proprietorship. That's bad news. We want to get into an LLC as soon as possible so that we have that availability of an S Corp available down the road, especially at that income level. That wasn't your question though. When it comes to running payroll for S Corp owners, I always say utilize a software or a service. They're relatively cheap. They're reasonable. They're easy to use. And guess what? It makes payroll so much easier. Small businesses that are still doing payroll by paper. They're making mistakes. They're missing payments. They're sending payments in late. They might be having money put away for a payment and then they need it. So they can't access it. Now they can't make their payments on time. It creates a mess. And so I always recommend utilizing a payroll software or a payroll service to run payroll because it's relatively cheap and they take care of everything. They direct deposit. They make payments to the government agencies. They file the forms to the government agencies. They take care of everything for you. As part of TaxElm, all of our members, we have a partner directory. And that partner directory are partners that we have vetted that provide these types of service that we can get you in front of. When it comes to a software for payroll, We're big fans of a software called Gusto. But if you're interested in having an actual payroll service, someone that can basically handle it for you, not just a software, you can access that within TaxElm, within our partner directory. We have a great partner that's very reasonable for this area as well. The next question we have is from Kevin. My spouse and I co-own a business. We recently took a three-day each-way road trip. We met with a client when we got to our destination and both worked on the way down, me taking phone calls and her scheduling appointments and responding to emails. How much of the lodging, meals, and other non-entertainment trip would be deductible? The primary purpose of this trip was to visit my client. Kevin, this is a great question. And when we talk about this idea of maximizing travel deductions, this is often what we're saying, hey, if you want to travel somewhere, how can we organize that around a client trip, meeting a vendor, meeting a client, those types of things? And this is a great way to do it. The thing is, we have to make sure it's ordinary and necessary. So if you traveled 6 days for an hour-long meeting, the IRS might say, that doesn't make sense. That's not acceptable. But if this was, let's say, a very important meeting, you had to be there in person, it took long to travel there, which is totally fine, then, and the sole purpose of that trip was to meet that client and go through that deal, go through that situation that you have, you want to document all the proof that backs that up and why that is an ordinary and necessary expense. And then that's a business trip. The IRS doesn't care if you at night go explore things, go visit some state parks, do something like that. As long as it's a business day, that's a business trip. And that travel, that automobile, those Airbnbs, those hotels, those meals on business days are all deductible. So the key thing is what's the primary purpose of that? If the primary purpose is to meet with a business owner, to meet with a client, a vendor, something like that, and everything makes sense, it's an ordinary necessary expense and not outrageous, and you could easily explain this to an IRS agent, then that trip is a business trip and those items associated with it are business deductible. Just make sure you're documenting this. I always say, do the sniff test. If you were telling somebody, imagine that you're sitting in front of an IRS agent before you even do this. Imagine you're sitting in front of an IRS agent explaining the situation. Does it sound legit? If you said, oh, we did a 7-day business trip for a 1-hour meeting, the IRS agent's going to say, no, not deductible. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. But if you say, well, no, we had a conference to attend, or we had this 3-day long meeting, it's very important. We wanted to tour their facilities, and we traveled 8 hours a day because we wanted to make sure we got there, but we didn't want to get overtired, things like that. Now we're talking with the IRS saying, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's a business trip. So just be careful on the documentation. Two more questions, and then we're going to knock it off. Another question from a Facebook group member. I have a single member LLC with no employees. I contracted an offshore out of the US freelancer to do some IT remote job and paid him via wire transfer. What would be the correct category to label this deduction? I'm planning to use TurboTax to file. Note, I've already obtained the required W-8 form. First off, great job on getting the W-8 form. That proves, if the IRS ever questions it, that proves that you paid somebody that is international related. Same thing as if you pay a contractor in the US, always grab a W-9 form prior to paying them so you have that on file to send a 1099 at year end. With international contractors, we don't need to send them a 1099 at year end, so we have that W-8 form on file to prove that that person was in fact an international contractor. As far as where you put this on your income statement, just put it on a contract labor. Totally fine. All right, final question. This question is from John. This is my first year in business. Me and my wife started a mobile barbecue business. The question for my expenses is as follows. I saved all receipts for food, supplies, equipment, marketing, vehicle expenses. Can I claim all of these as an itemized deduction? I also use my cell phone for the business. Is that part of that deduction as well? What about business insurance I pay for monthly? Is that also a deduction? Any help of this would be greatly appreciated. John, you are in the right place. This is exactly what we're talking about. We talk about this concept of maximizing deductions. We're saying, take advantage to what's yours. Yes, anything business related, especially if it's 100% business related, is a deduction, and you take that as an expense in your business. Now, you said itemized deductions, and I want to be very careful there. There is something on your personal tax return that's either a standard deduction or itemized deductions. This is not where this goes. So as a business owner, you'd report your income. So I'm assuming you're a sole proprietorship based on the way you're talking, or you don't have an LLC, S corporation, C corp, none of that, but you're just a sole prop. You'd report the income from your business on a Schedule C, and then any expenses associated with that business, you would also report on that Schedule C. So you're going to have income on that Schedule C, you're going to have expenses on that Schedule C, and then you're going to have whatever's left over. That's going to be your profit. that's what you're going to be taxed on. And so we want to make sure we're taking advantage of all these deductions that are available to us as expenses to help offset that income to lower our tax liability. You're in the right place. You're doing things right. You're saving receipts. Keep listening. Keep diving in. If you want more assistance, you want full access to our team of tax experts to answer these questions as they pop up, check out our software, TaxElm, TaxElm.com. But John, I would also recommend going and downloading our Starting a Business series. Go to our website, taxsavingspodcast.com/starting a business. And we have a whole series on things you want to know. We want to make sure that you fully understand what does this mean to be a business owner. And we did a full series on this, basically from a conversation I had with a friend who knows nothing about business but was going out on his own. And I documented our conversations, documented his questions, and I did a Starting a Business series, and that's where you can find there. Again, taxsavingspodcast.com/starting a business. Remember, if you want your questions answered on one of our podcasts, just like we did today, go to taxsavingspodcast.com. Click podcast on top, scroll to the bottom, and there's a form that you can submit. And you never know, your question might be answered on our next live Q&A session. I want to thank you for listening to this episode. I love doing these Q&A sessions. We're answering client or listener questions live, and I just hope they're so helpful. It's really helpful for me to see kind of what questions are arising out there. Keep asking these questions, keep learning, and most importantly, keep implementing the strategies that we're talking about. Again, don't forget to sign up for our webinar that we're doing next week, April 24th at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Go to taxsavingspodcast.com/taxes. I want to thank you for listening to another episode, and I'll see you next week when we continue this discussion about how can we help you as a business owner pay the least amount of taxes as legally possible.
This has been another episode of the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast. If you enjoy our weekly episodes, please leave a review and share with other business owners. You can find previous episodes and more information at www.taxsavingspodcast.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.